KSJE and the Farmington Public Library present Quintos, Hannah, and Tales.
Hi, my name is Quinn Holman. I'm here at the Farmington Public Library, and I'm going to read some stories from our collection. My first book is called A Walk in Paris by Salvatore Rubino. Hello, this is me, and that's my grandpa, and we're in Paris. We just came up from the metro at Place Maubert. I wonder what all those crates are for. You'll see, Grandpa promises with a smile. Place Maubert is in the Latin Quarter of Paris, south of the River Seine. The crates are full of fruit and vegetables. It's market day in the square. Shoppers like to visit their favorite stalls, Grandpa says, chatting and asking questions while they choose. I get some tasty cheese to try from a vendor. We walk down a street where the houses lean together to one where they stand apart. This kind of road is much newer, Grandpa tells me. It's called a boulevard. It's very wide and busy. We better cross quickly before the lights change. I see a street cleaner turn a big key. Now there's water gushing out of the curb. Watch your feet, Grandpa, I say. We have these special taps all over Paris, the other street cleaner explains. They give us water for cleaning right on the street. The boulevard leads to a square where lots of people are greeting one another. This is a famous spot, says Grandpa. People often meet their friends by the fountain at Place Saint-Michel. Around a corner, we find the River Seine. What's that big church on the island, I ask. The Cathedral of Notre Dame, Grandpa replies. Would you like to climb up and see the view? We have to wait in line for quite a long time, but it's worth it. It's lovely and breezy up here. Grandpa points out some landmarks. The tallest building we can see is the Eiffel Tower. We make our way back down to the ground and over another bridge. Paris has two islands, Grandpa explains. This is the little one, Île Saint-Louis. We take a seat close to the water's edge. A boat passes by, so I wave. Careful, Grandpa laughs. Don't fall in. Next, we cross over the right bank of the river. Paris has style, don't you think? Grandpa asks as we pass a fancy salon. I think there are lots of ways to wear your hair. No wonder I'm hungry. It's 1 o'clock. We find a cozy bistro for lunch. Then we're ready to explore Le Marais. This is a giant doorway. It had to be wide enough for a horse and carriage, Grandpa explains. That's how people traveled years ago. We turn down one street after another, and I think we might be lost, until Grandpa points to a strange-looking building. Here we are. Let's go around the front, he says. It's called Le Centre Pompidou, and look, it has all its pipes and escalators on the outside. I think it's formidable. Formidable is French for wonderful. We've walked a long way on the wide, busy road when we come to a window full of cakes. Which one would you like? Asked Grandpa. That one, that one, that one, and that one, I say. We turn into a courtyard with a pyramid in the middle. There are rows of tall, fancy buildings around the sides. A tour guide is talking to her group. This is the Louvre Museum, she says. Its treasures include a famous painting called the Mona Lisa. I see the Mona Lisa, I tell Grandpa. She's on that poster over there. We rest in the Tuileries Jardin, and Grandpa enjoys his favorite view while I make a friend by the water. Then Grandpa says we need to find a metro station. We listen to a cheerful tune while we wait for our train. Where are we going? I ask, but he won't tell me. It's a surprise, he says. The sky is getting dark when we come up from the metro. Grandpa buys me a souvenir from a kiosk by the station. Do you remember the Eiffel Tower? He asks me. We saw it from Notre Dame. I look up and find myself face to face with the real Eiffel Tower. It's enormous and fizzing with lights. We stay till the end of the show. Can we come back one day? I ask Grandpa as we leave. I'd like that, he says. When I get home, I tell him, I'll make a souvenir for you. Then you'll always remember our walk in Paris. Merci et au revoir. The end. My next book is called Madeleine in London by Ludwig Belmamont. In an old house in Paris that was covered with vines lived 12 little girls in two straight lines. They left the house at 9:30. The smallest one was Madeleine. In another old house that stood next door lived Pepito, the son of the Spanish ambassador. An ambassador doesn't have to pay rent, but he has to move to wherever he's sent. He took his family and his hat. They left for England, all but the cat. I'm glad, said the cat. There goes that bad hat. let him annoy some other kitten at the embassy in Great Britain. The little girls all cried, "Boo-hoo, we'd like to go to London, too." In London, Pepito just picked at his dinner. Soon he grew thin, and then he grew thinner. And when he began to look like a stick, his mama said, "My, this boy looks sick. I think Pepito is lonely for Madeline and the little girls next door." His papa called Paris. "Hello, Miss Clavel. My little Pepito is not at all well. He misses you, and he's lonesome for Madeline and the little girls next door. May we request the pleasure of your company? There's plenty of room here at our embassy. Quick, darlings, pack your bags and we'll get out to the airport and catch the next jet. Fill the house with lovely flowers. Fly our flags from all the towers. For Pepito's birthday bake, the most wonderful birthday cake. Place 12 beds in two straight lines. The last one here will be Madeline's. Welcome to London. The weather's fine, and it's exactly 9:30. Good heavens, said Miss Clavel, we've brought no toy for His Excellency's little boy. Said Madeline, everybody knows, of course, he always said he craved a horse. In their little purses and in... But in London there's a place to get a retired horse to keep as a pet. And when they went to the place, they found a horse that was gentle, strong, and sound. Some poor old Dobbins are made into glue, but not this one. Look, he's as good as new. Happy birthday, Pepito, happy birthday to you. This lovely horse belongs with you. Just then, a trumpet blew, suddenly outside, and off he flew, over the wall to take his place at the head of the Queen's lifeguards, which he had always led, before the Royal Society for the Protection of Horses had retired him from Her Majesty's forces. Oh dear, they've gone. Oh, what a pity. Come, children, we'll find them in the city. Careful, girls, watch your feet. Look right before you cross the street. Oh, for a cup of tea and crumpets. Hark, hark, there goes the sound of trumpets. These birds have seen all this before, but they are glad of an encore. And so are the people on ship and shore. And now it's getting really grand. Here comes the mascot and his band. The people below are stout and loyal, and those on the balcony mostly royal. The show is over, it's getting dark, in the city, in the park. Dinner is waiting, we must be on time. Now let's find Pepito and Madeline. Well, isn't it lovely? They're standing sentry right here at the Whitehall entry. That is the power and the beauty. In England, everyone does his duty. Visiting is fun and gay. Celebrate a lovely day. Everyone had been well fed. Everyone was in his bed. Only one was forgotten. He'd been on his feet all day long with nothing to eat. In a cottage that was thatched, wearing trousers that were patched, lived the gardener who loved flowers, especially in the morning hours, when their faces, fresh with dew, smiled at him. How do you do? The gardener, who was never late, opened up the garden gate. The gardener dropped his garden hose. There wasn't a single daisy or rose. All my work and all my care, for naught, oh, this is hard to bear. Where's my celery, carrots, tomatoes, my beans and peas, and not an apple on my apple trees? Everybody had to cry, not a single eye was dry. Oh, look, who is lying there, with his feet up in the air? I feel his breath, he's not dead yet. Quick, Pepito, get the vet. The vet said, don't worry, he's only asleep. Help me get him on his feet. As a diet, there's nothing worse than green apples and roses for an old horse. Dear lady, said Miss Clavel, we beg your pardon. It seems our horse has eaten up your garden. A little sunshine, a little rain, and it all will be the same again. Pepito's mother said, quite so, quite so. Still, I'm afraid the horse must go. Then Madeline cried, I know what to do. Pepito, let us take care of him for you. Fasten your seatbelts. In 30 minutes, you will see the Eiffel Tower. Madeline, Madeline, where have you been? We've been to London to see the Queen. At last, sighed Madeline, we are able to sit down without being 13 at a table. They brushed his teeth and gave him bread and covered him up and put him to bed. Good night, little girls. Thank the Lord you are well. And now go to sleep, said Miss Clavel. And she turned out the light and closed the door. There were 12 upstairs and below one more. My next book is called The Paper Bag Princess by Robert Munch. Elizabeth was a beautiful princess. She lived in a castle and had expensive princess clothes. She was going to marry a prince named Ronald. Unfortunately, a dragon smashed her castle, burned all her clothes with his fiery breath, and carried off Prince Ronald. Elizabeth decided to chase the dragon and get Ronald back. She looked everywhere for something to wear, but the only thing she could find that was not burnt was a paper bag. So she put on the paper bag and followed the dragon. He was easy to follow because he left a trail of burnt forests and horses' bones. Finally, Elizabeth came to a cave with a large door that had a huge knocker on it. She took hold of the knocker and banged on the door. The dragon stuck his nose out of the door and said, "Well, a princess. I love to eat princesses, but I've already eaten a whole castle today. I'm a very busy dragon. Come back tomorrow." He slammed the door so fast, Elizabeth almost got her nose caught. Elizabeth grabbed the knocker and banged on the door again. The dragon stuck his nose out of the door and said, "Go away. I love to eat princesses, but I've already eaten a whole castle today. I'm a very busy dragon. Come back tomorrow." "Wait," shouted Elizabeth. "Is it true that you are the smartest and fiercest dragon in the whole world?" "Yes," said the dragon. "Is it true," said Elizabeth, "that you can burn up 10 forests with your fiery breath?" "Oh yes," said the dragon, and he took a huge deep breath and breathed out so much fire that he burnt up 50 forests. "Fantastic," said Elizabeth, and the dragon took another huge breath and breathed out so much fire that he burnt up 100 forests. "Magnificent," said Elizabeth, and the dragon took another huge breath, but this time nothing came out. The dragon didn't even have enough fire left to cook a meatball. Elizabeth said, "Dragon, is it true that you can fly around the world in just 10 seconds? "Why, yes," said the dragon, and jumped up and flew all the way around the world in just 10 seconds. He was very tired when he got back, but Elizabeth shouted, "Fantastic, do it again." So the dragon jumped up and flew around the whole world in just 20 seconds. When he got back, he was too tired to talk, and he lay down and went straight to sleep. Elizabeth whispered very softly, "Hey, dragon." The dragon didn't move at all. She lifted up the dragon's ear and put her head right inside. She shouted as loud as she could, "Hey, dragon." The dragon was so tired, he didn't even move. Elizabeth walked right over the dragon and opened the door to the cave. There was Prince Ronald. He looked at her and said, "Elizabeth, you are a mess. You smell like ashes, your hair is all tangled, and you are wearing a dirty old paper bag. Come back when you are dressed like a real princess." "Ronald," said Elizabeth, "your clothes are really pretty, and your hair is very neat. You look like a real prince, but you are a bum." They didn't get married after all. And my next book is called Rapunzel by Paul O. Zielinski. Long ago, there lived a man and a woman who had no children. As year followed year, this was their only sorrow. Then one spring, the wife felt her dress growing tight around her waist. Joyfully, she said to her husband, "We will have a child at last." The wife liked to sit by a small window at the back of their house and look down into a beautiful garden. Flowers grew there, and rare fruits and herbs of every kind. The garden belonged to a sorceress who had enclosed it on all sides with a high wall. No one dared to enter it. One day, as the wife sat by the window, her eyes fixed on a bed of Rapunzel. The herb looked so luxuriant, so green, thick, and fresh, that she felt a terrible longing to taste it. Day after day, her craving grew until she began to suffer. She became pale and wretched and said to her husband, "If I cannot eat some of the Rapunzel from the garden behind our house, I will die." Her husband was alarmed to hear such desperate words. He loved his wife dearly and saw no choice but to bring her some of the Rapunzel. 10 times, 20 times, he circled the garden wall, but found neither door nor gate. So, lowering himself to the window at the back of the house, he climbed down into the sorceress's garden. Quickly, he pulled up as much Rapunzel as he could hold and scrambled back up through the window. His wife made a salad of the roots and greens and devoured it with a wild hunger. So intensely delicious was the taste that she nearly fainted as she ate. Yet the next day, her craving for Rapunzel was even fiercer than before. Once again, the husband made his way down the wall and into the garden. But this time, as he reached for the Rapunzel, the sorceress rose up before him. "How dare you come here to steal my Rapunzel," she cried. "It will serve you ill." "Have mercy on me," the man begged. "My wife is carrying our child. She has seen your Rapunzel from our window and conceived such a longing for it that she will die unless she can eat some. What am I to do?" The sorceress considered his words. "If what you say is true, you may take the Rapunzel that you need. But in return, you must give me the child your wife will bear." The frightened husband did not know what to say. Rather than see his wife die, he agreed to the demand. And when the child was born, the sorceress appeared in the room. She named the baby girl Rapunzel and carried her away. The sorceress cared for the baby, seeing to her every need. Rapunzel grew to be a child of rare beauty, with pale skin and an abundance of flowing red gold hair. When she reached the age of 12, the sorceress led her into the forest to live in a high tower. The tower was a great column rising in the middle of the woods. Although it looked narrow on the outside, on the inside it was large, with many elegant rooms. Yet no door led into this tower, and its only window was at the very top. When the sorceress wished to enter, she stood below the window and called, "Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair." Then Rapunzel would unpin her braids, wind them around a hook on the window frame, and let them tumble to the ground. The sorceress would grab hold of them and climb up. For years, Rapunzel lived alone in her rooms above the treetops, visited only by the sorceress. Then one day, a king's son came riding through the woods. As he neared the tower, he heard a voice sweeter than any he had ever known. It was Rapunzel singing to the forest birds. Charmed by her voice, the prince fell deeply in love. He circled the tower 10 times, 20 times, but found no entrance. "How strange this tower is," he said to himself, and felt he would die of sadness. He inquired at the nearest houses, where he was told that the tower belonged to a sorceress, who was keeping a young girl shut away inside. Day after day, the prince returned, hoping to glimpse the girl whose sweet singing had moved him so. One morning, he saw the sorceress appear below the window and call up, "Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair," and the prince knew how he might enter the tower. The next evening, he stood under the window and called, "Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair." Rapunzel's hair came billowing down, and the king's son took hold of it and pulled himself up. Rapunzel was shocked when the prince stepped through her window, for she had never set eyes on a man before, but he began to speak to her in such a friendly way that her fear was soon gone. "Your singing was so beautiful," the prince told her, "that I knew I must see your face, or my heart would have no peace." Rapunzel saw that he was young and handsome, and in her own heart she felt a happiness she had never known. And when the prince proposed to marry her, she consented. They held a ceremony in the tower, and every evening after that, he returned. The sorceress, who came only by day, knew nothing of his visits. One day, when the sorceress entered the tower, Rapunzel said, "If you please, stepmother, help me with my dress. It is growing so tight around my waist, and it doesn't want to fit me." Instantly, the sorceress understood what Rapunzel did not. "Oh, you wicked child," she shrieked, "what do I hear you say? I thought I had kept you safe, but you have betrayed me." In a rage, she seized the braids of Rapunzel's hair and sheared them off. Then she sent the miserable girl to a wild country to live alone with no one to care for her. After some months in this wilderness, Rapunzel gave birth to twins, a boy and a girl. Once the sorceress had cast Rapunzel out of the tower, she gathered the cut-off hair and fastened it to the window hook. That evening, when the prince came up, the poor prince pulled himself up to the window to be confronted by the sorceress, her eyes wild with fury. "So you have come to fetch your wife," she cried. "Well, you shall never see her again. Rapunzel is lost to you forever." Struck through with grief, the prince let go of the braids, and he plummeted to the ground. Although the fall should have killed him, the prince lived, but his eyes were hurt. He could no longer see. Wretched and blind, he stumbled from place to place, eating nothing but roots and berries, thinking of nothing but his beloved wife. After a year of wandering in such misery, he came into the same wilderness where Rapunzel was living with their children. There one day he heard a voice so dear to him that he rushed towards it. Rapunzel saw him and opened her arms to him. As Rapunzel embraced the prince, two of her tears fell into his eyes, and his vision grew clear, and once again the prince could see. He gazed at Rapunzel and at their two children. He looked up at the hills beyond the rocky landscape and knew that he was not lost. The prince led his family out of the wilderness towards his kingdom, where they were received with great joy. There they lived a long life, happy and content. The end. Those were all selections from the Farmington Public Library. For more selections like this, please come visit, and we'll see you next time.
This has been Quintos Hana and Tales, presented by the Farmington Public Library and KSJE 90.9 FM.